When you need to know what's going on in the UK, David Curtin has his finger on the pulse. Today's News Talk, TNT.
Hello, welcome to the David Curtin Show here on Today's News Talk. It's really good to have you joining me again today. It's Friday, so this is my last day in a run of 5 days for the week, but I'm here every day from 10 till 11, Monday till Friday. Now, on the show today, obviously the local election results are going to play a big feature, a big part of the show, because that is the big news in the UK. And Lembit Opik, our TNT's very own Lembit Opik, our presenter, will be here to join me and talk about that as my first guest on the show. And I also have Paul Thorpe, who some of you will know, who is a patriotic political commentator, joining me as my second guest on the show. However, if you do want to get involved, send me a message, or you can call in if you want to join the conversation. And the numbers to join and call the show are as follows.
This is the way we're going to be heard.
From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I warned this would happen. Something that I said, and I've been saying for a couple of years ago, the International Holocaust Remembrance Association's working definition of anti-Semitism that is non-legally binding would eventually become legally binding and adopted into law in all of the countries, particularly in the West, that they have been going around talking to NGOs and businesses and government departments, getting them to adopt their definition of anti-Semitism. And the first indication we had of that was early this year when Kirsty Noem, the governor of South Dakota, wrote it into law there in that particular state. But yesterday, we hear that the House of Representatives in the USA, one of the two parts of Congress, have voted for Bill H.R. 6090, which is called the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act, which adopts the International Holocaust Remembrance Association's definition of anti-Semitism into law. It says here in the preamble, to provide for the consideration of a definition of anti-Semitism set forth by the IHRA for the enforcement of federal anti-discrimination laws concerning education programs or activities and for other purposes. So it's been said this is only for campuses as a reaction to what has been going on with the anti-genocide rallies being taken over and infiltrated by the Soros crowd and money to discredit the anti-genocide movement on student campuses. We know that. That's what they do. But it also says for other purposes, which is very vague, and it could mean anything. So this definition has been passed by the House of Representatives. It's not law yet because it has to go through the Senate. They will probably pass it and President Biden will probably rubber stamp it. But in the USA, you do have a final line of defense against these attacks on free speech. And this is an egregious attack of free speech, which I will explain later. You do have the Supreme Court, and hopefully there are enough members of the Supreme Court who are actually American constitutionalists rather than cultural Marxists on the left or neocon ziocons on the that side of the right, which is not truly conservative and conserving free speech. Now, this is a very, very dangerous piece of legislation. It has been under constant criticism for the last day or so since it has been passed, and quite rightly so. The IHRA's definition of anti-Semitism has 11 clauses in it, and I'm not going to read them all out, but some of the specific things that this will make criminal, as it is now being adopted into US federal law, would be questioning the Holocaust. Now, people have different opinions on the Holocaust. Everyone is taught in school that there was a Holocaust and 6 million Jews died. Some people question that, and everyone has the right to question something which they are presented with as as a piece of information. That should be part of what is allowed in free speech. But this definition says, denying the fact, scope, mechanisms, e.g. gas chambers, or intentionality of the genocide of the Jewish people at the hands of National Socialist Germany and its supporters and accomplices during World War II is anti-Semitic, and therefore, if it's adopted into law, would be criminal. Some countries in Europe, notably Germany and Austria, also already have Holocaust denial laws. You can get up to 4 years in prison for saying you don't agree with the Holocaust. Yeah, whether that's right or wrong, as I said, everyone should have the right to do that. It is absolutely draconian that people can get sent to prison just for expressing an opinion which some people don't like. If you say that some Jews have a prime loyalty to Israel rather than their own country, whether that's the USA, obviously in the case of the USA, or any other country around the world, that is also deemed to be anti-Semitic. And if that's brought into law, you will be a criminal for suggesting perhaps Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State, who has dual US-Israel nationality, has a prime loyalty to Israel. It's an absolutely legitimate question to ask, but if you ask that question now, if you state you think that, you may end up in prison if this goes through the Senate and so on. Also, quite disturbingly, quoting from the Bible, the Jews in the first century were responsible for killing Jesus. It will also be deemed to be anti-Semitic, but that's absolutely a fact. So therefore, now reading some verses out of the Bible, which pastors and vicars and priests and preachers do every week in church, could now be deemed to be anti-Semitic and get you put in prison. And also saying that the Jews have, or Jews as a collective, have control or significant power in the economy or politics or entertainment or the media, is also deemed to be anti-Semitic, even though it seems apparently to be true here, because there are groups such as the ADL and so on, which would love to get this law in place in the USA. Obviously, the International Holocaust Remembrance Association itself obviously has an incredible amount of power to get something like this, their own definition, brought into law in the United States. If you say, well, because of this, they have a lot of power, which is obviously true, that itself will be deemed to be anti-Semitic and could cause you to become a criminal. The whole thing is absolutely nonsense, but it's happening. And it's happening in lockstep around the world. It's one of the latest things that is happening in all lots of different areas. Our freedoms are under attack, not necessarily from accusations of anti-Semitism like this is, but we've seen things going on over the last 4 years in lockstep together to take away our freedoms, whether it's lockdowns, coerced injections, and digital identities, and transgenderism coming through. This seems to be the latest thing to take away freedom to express your opinions on a certain topic or a certain area of society and national conversation. It should have been thrown out, but it was voted through 320-91. I hope the Supreme Court overturns this, and I hope that people in the United Kingdom and other countries around the West have got enough brain power to see that this is an egregious attack on our freedom of speech, and it should never be allowed into law. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
Keeping the commitment 24/7.
I've been in the car all day and I got to listen.
Can't get enough of it.
You guys are doing a great job.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Gemma Cooper is here with me to talk about the latest in the UK's news headlines. I think there's only one big story today, isn't there, Gemma? What's going on today in the UK?
Well, of course, it is the local election results, which are coming in thick and fast now. The results aren't all in. Just over a third now have been returned and counted. But Keir Starmer, leader of the Labour Party, is absolutely jubilant. And in the last hour has called on Rishi Sunak to call a general election. No surprise there. Labour have taken so many seats away from the Conservatives in the local councils. And obviously, the big news was that they took Blackpool South as an MP seat away from the Conservatives. And now that seat will be taken by a Labour MP who will sit in the House of Commons with a 26% swing from Labour to from Conservative to Labour. That's how much of the vote share they took. So to Keir Starmer with Angela Rayner and other assorted Labour bigwigs in Blackpool at the moment with the new MP. In the last hour, as I say, he's calling on Rishi to accept defeat and call a general election. He can no longer be leader. Some people saying this might be the worst ever local election result for the Conservatives. They could lose up to 500 seats. It's certainly taking a drubbing, and Reform UK picking up a lot of votes also and giving the Conservatives a run for their money. Also, just a couple of other headlines there. There are warnings today that young people questioning their gender could turn to the internet black market to buy hormone drugs following the CAS review, which says that NHS and other clinics should not be prescribing puberty blockers to anyone under the age of 16. There's no evidence that it works. There's no evidence for any of it. So that there are worries now that young people would just go on the internet and buy God knows what from God knows whom. And also a teenage boy, a 17-year-old boy, will appear in court very shortly indeed, charged with three counts of attempted grievous bodily harm after an incident at a school in South Yorkshire on Wednesday, where two women in their 20s and another pupil were attacked with a sharp instrument. So that teenager will be charged in a court very shortly, David.
Yeah, thank you, Gemma. Well, I mean, obviously the local elections are the big story today, and I've been looking forward to them and preparing for them for 6 months, and I suppose all the political parties have as well. But it's no surprise that Keir Starmer is going to come out and say, oh, look, you should have a general election now. I mean, that's par for the course. But and there is going to be a general election in the next 6 months or 7 months. I mean, we know that. The final day possible is the 28th of January. January 2025, but it's almost certainly going to be before Christmas. I don't think anyone really wants to have an election campaign over Christmas, but you never know. But the question is here, you know, some people are mentioning, well, if the results that are still to come in, the big results from the combined authority mayor contests in London, in Manchester, and particularly West Midlands and Tees Valley, where they're going to be looking to see if those two metro mayors that are Conservative, they got voted in last time, if they're going to keep those seats or lose their seats. People are looking and saying, well, if those go, then there may be some kind of insurgency against Rishi Sunak and some kind of move to remove him. I mean, is that just rumour, or do you think that actually might well happen?
It might well happen. I mean, we've seen politics in Scotland over the last not even week, really, change so quickly. And you know, David, yourself, anything is possible in politics, absolutely anything. Rishi may decide on an individual level, although you never really decide anything on an individual level, even if you are prime minister, do you? It's all, you know, done behind closed doors with your advisors and the party itself telling you what to do. The party may decide he's a liability. The party may decide if we're going to go into an election, which we are, we need somebody else. Or is it too much chaos? And then another unelected leader of the party takes the party to the polls. Who knows? Who knows? I'm never surprised now with what I see in politics. And I do think as well that Reform have given, whatever your opinion of Reform UK, previously the Brexit Party, they've taken the lion's share of the Tory vote in some of the heartlands. So whilst Labour have gained, it's because Conservatives have lost out to not tactical voting, but voters have gone elsewhere with a right-wing vote, effectively, a more Conservative vote. They don't feel the Conservative Party is representing Conservative values. They feel Reform is. So it's not that necessarily Labour have gained because of Labour. It's Labour have gained because of split votes in some places. So let's see. Let's see. As you rightly say, the results aren't all in yet. Obviously, a lot of eyes are on London. Sadiq Khan, will he keep his position? What that means to the people of London? Yeah, it's an exciting day. You know, normally Fridays we kind of try and wind down, don't we, David? But not today.
We do, yeah.
Not today.
We're going to be going all weekend, isn't it? Because, yeah, like you say, usually most of the results are in by now, but some of the counts aren't even starting until today. And the London count isn't even starting till tomorrow. I think today they're validating the the papers, and then they're actually going to do the count of the numbers of people who have got votes tomorrow. So we're not going to find out until tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow evening about the London mayor election result, which is the big one everyone wants to know about. So we got to be patient. I want to know the results, but they're going to be coming through today, tomorrow, and some even into Sunday. So, you know, I've got my whole weekend. I'm going to be watching my screen, even though I might be out. I'll be on there. So we shall see what happens. Anyway, Gemma, thank you so much for joining me and talking about today's news headlines here on today's News Talk TNT.
The Light is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far-right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
So many people who had no history of heart illnesses have got it now, or blood clotting after the COVID-19 vaccination. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Results from local elections in England and Wales are coming through thick and fast through the night and through the weekend as well. And here to discuss the latest in the results with me is our very own Lembit Opik. Welcome to the show, Lembit.
Greetings, Mr. Curtin. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you. I mean, I'm so excited about the results. I mean, before I was involved in politics, I always loved seeing the results coming through, you know, seeing who's won what, you know, and you know, what the future is going to be. You know, it's obviously you got to think about the meaning of the results and which parties have gained, which parties have lost, and what that means. And now to be involved in it as well, it's incredibly exciting, you know. Even though for me, sadly, so far, I haven't had any councillors, you know, elected with the results that have come in yet. I'm looking forward to the London Assembly results because that's proportional and you only need 5% to get a member on the London Assembly. So I'm looking forward to that one when it comes in tomorrow in particular. But what do you make of everything from what you've seen so far?
Well, first of all, perhaps like you, I don't miss being a candidate. In British politics now, it's just gone down the pan. I'm glad other people are willing to stand. And you can sit there like a general telling your foot soldiers to go over the top, a bit like World War One, and maybe some of them will make it to the finishing line. What I make of it is a general dissatisfaction with the mainstream parties. It's quite obvious. Mm. The figures were being touted that the Labour Party would have a great leap forward, the Conservatives would lurch back. That's happening to an extent, but not by much, as much as I'd have expected. At the moment, about a third of the way through the counting, Labour's up about 50 seats. It should be a lot more than that. Conservatives down 120. But the Lib Dems, Liberal Democrats, my old party, who were saying they were going to do great things, a third of the way through, they've only got roughly 20 new seats. I guess they'll top out at about 120. Taking a step back from those figures, what it means is the big parties, they're changing a bit, but the public's really fed up. The Green Party's doing quite well, but I don't think that's because people believe there's a climate emergency. They just want to find somebody to vote for, which isn't Tory, Labour and Lib Dem. So we're not going to learn so much from that. The by-election in Blackpool, it's a city in the northwest of Britain, that was won quite convincingly by the Labour Party. Everyone knew they would win. And then the Conservatives came more or less second equal with the Reform Party, which is their nemesis, a party which is definitely leeching votes off the Conservatives. But even if you add the vote of the Reform and the Conservatives together, then the Conservatives would still have lost. So no surprises yet. Perhaps the biggest surprise for me is that Labour's not doing better.
Well, you know, looking at those figures from the Blackpool South and by-election. One thing that isn't mentioned, which I picked up, is that actually Labour have lost votes. They won, but they lost votes. It's just the Tories lost more. So you look at their actual number of votes, went down from about 12,500 to 10,800 approximately. So they've lost nearly 2,000 votes. But the Tories went down from 16,247 to 3,218. So they lost 13,000 votes. So they've both gone down in terms of votes. So the Labour Party have won, but it's not because their people are flocking to the Labour Party. Actually, they're losing support, but they're just not losing it as fast and precipitously as the Tory Party. But then also, on the other hand, you got Reform coming up a little bit. Their vote share, well, number of votes went up from 2,000 to 3,000. So they haven't really capitalized on the massive drop in support from the Tories either. So, you know, it's maybe, you know, Labour are crowing about how they've won, but I don't really think that they've got too much to celebrate about, to be honest.
I think the analysis is pretty broadly where I stand, David. Mm. A few thoughts here. I think Reform will come in between 15 and 20% at the next election. I would think that's because those individuals who vote for them will mainly be disillusioned Conservatives. They'll vote, but they won't want to vote Conservative. And since everybody knows the Tories are going to lose the election anyway, they might as well bloody the nose of the Tory party by voting for Reform. They can always go back to the Tories at the next election if there's a good leader. Second observation is that I think Labour's suffering for three reasons. First of all, Keir Starmer is not a strong leader. I just don't see it. I don't see why anyone would talk him up. Secondly, they've made some horrendous policy mistakes by opposing a ceasefire in Gaza. That really irritates a large ethnic vote, which they would tend to otherwise have. And then all this rubbish about the Greens and so on. It's confusing to people. You know my views on this. There's no climate emergency, but they're confusing. And then the third thing is, if you were to ask somebody in the street, what do Labour stand for? Most people couldn't say anything. So they haven't got a unique selling proposition, at least with someone like Tony Blair, cool Britannia, new Labour. Those phrases didn't really mean anything, but everybody knew them. And with Starmer, it's just this kind of blancmange that's just going on and it's not motivating. That's why, I mean, I think the Green Party is pernicious. I think they're damaging this country and they're wagging the dog of politics. But you can't take away from the fact that people are voting for them in protest because they're so sick of the uni parties.
I think, you know, the Green Party have got an amazing name, but they really, their policies don't reflect the name that they have. And a lot of people vote for the Green Party because they care about trees and they care about the countryside, they care about animals, and they think that that's what they stand for. They don't actually realize that they're destroying the countryside by putting in solar farms and wind turbines and supporting Agenda 2030 and the climate emergency, which is restricting car use and then actually is harming people's lives and also supporting this absolute nutty cultural Marxist transgenderism wherever they go. But a lot of people don't realize that. I mean, you know, I just had a chat to someone the other day. I come from Sussex originally. The village I grew up in has now got three green councillors, but I don't think the people there would support transgenderism or the paving over of our countryside. But they still vote for them because they think, oh, well, they're nice. I mean, that really is, they should be taken to the trading standards office, really, for misrepresenting what they really stand for with their name, I think.
What's going to happen is the Greens going to come under more scrutiny. A number of them have been found guilty of criminal acts of essentially damage to property and that kind of thing. And they carry on being Greens. And then I know one who is very, very anti-gay. And yet the party, in a very clear departure from nature, is saying, well, when it comes to transgenderism, we should do anything to help this, to facilitate this. And then there's even bigger irony. Here's a leaflet which I received from the Greens. And I'm going to quote it for you. See, now, David, listen carefully. See if you can spot the irony, okay? Greens are opposing the expansion of Gatwick. As an airline pilot, I am against business as usual airport expansion. You heard me right. As an airline pilot, this is the green candidate. This is a this the green candidate flies planes which use 4,000 liters of fuel an hour, but he's green. What's all this about? It's just like he looks quite pasty and ill. I don't think I'd be too comfortable if he was flying me away. Not least because he'd probably try to switch the engines off to save the environment. And this is the thing: it's all contradictory rubbish. The Greens have just been turfed out in Scotland, partly because the Scottish National Party, I would imagine, saw them as an electoral liability. On and on and on about transgenderism, which is important to a very small proportion of the human race. It's important in that sense, but it's not like center stage for most people. And then the wacky environmental policies, which are just making Scotland uninhabitable to me. So I think once people begin to realize what you get with the Greens, they'll be rather short-lived. And I don't see them making any gains in the general election.
Yeah, let's hope so. Look, we'll stay with us, Lembit. We're going to have a quick news break and we'll be back in a minute's time. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
What a news day this is turning out to be.
Wait till you hear this.
Now, TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. In New York City, residents Hillary Barr and Jeannie Springer voiced concerns over public safety and the enforcement of protest regulations at a city hall meeting. Barr, who experienced anti-Semitism during a protest outside the Israeli embassy, described the protesters as radical and dangerous. The Chinese Navy has commenced sea trials for its third and most advanced aircraft carrier, the Fujian, as reported by state media. This 80,000 metric ton vessel surpasses its predecessors, the Shandong and the Liaoning.
Why not give TNT Radio a follow? We're on all major social platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Gab, and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time right here on today's News Talk.
TNT Radio.
TNT Radio.
Local elections have been last yesterday and results are coming in over today, tomorrow and Sunday. But some of you have commented on our little section on that, me and Lembit talking about local elections here. We've got Photon says, glad to see more independents got seats. That's true. I think there's been about 40 or so gains for independents in local councils so far, which is really good. Lord Melbury says, green on the outside and red in the inside. That's the Greens. Absolutely true. Yes. Pretty Marxist and cultural Marxist on the inside if you look below the surface. Danny says the Greens are highly motivated and campaign locally. This is all that is needed to win local council seats. Well, I guess, Danny, you might live in an area where you've got some green candidates and councillors. I don't know which part of the country you're in, but yeah, they are gaining a few seats and they've come on. They've, you know, you've got to hand it to them. They've increased their campaigning strategy and their activity over the last couple of years. Although I wouldn't support them if you paid me, but there we go. Anyway, Lembit, back to you. Welcome back to the show. We were just talking about the Greens and your green airline pilot. I don't know how that works. That's a bit of an oxymoron, isn't it?
Yeah. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Why did they select someone who flies 200 tons of metal through the sky? I happen to love flying, and I don't think it does an iota of damage to the environment. But if you're in a party which says, we've got to stop flying, you shouldn't have an airline pilot as your candidate. But anyway, I cause you to digress.
Yeah, well, no, it's a good point. I mean, the Greens, they're all their heroes are people like Greta Thunberg, aren't they? Who like flies all over the world to climate conferences to tell everybody else that they shouldn't use their cars. I mean, so the hypocrisy is rife there. But back to, you know, the elections and what they mean. So obviously, results are coming in. It's looking really bad for the fake Conservative Party, as I call them, because they're not really conservative. But it pressure will be on Rishi Sunak. Do you think this is going to change anything imminently? Do you think there might be a new Tory leadership contest or an imminent election in the summer? Or do you think we'll just continue to, they'll plod along to the end, to the very bitter end, and we'll have to, you know, wait until winter for an election?
They'll limp to failure. around October. That's when I think the election's going to be. Why October? Because November, the weather gets worse. It makes people even more miserable. They kind of punish the government if the weather changes. May not be rational, but that's how it works. So October or November, that's going to be the election. So Rishi Sunak will be in charge. They won't change his position for somebody else. But if you think about the logic of it, that makes sense. A competent leader won't want to take control of the Titanic when it's already sinking. So they're going to wait for the bubbles to come up from the seabed and then say, well, let's salvage what we can and rebuild or build a new ship. The front runners, people like Penny Mordaunt, who I now think will be the next leader of the Conservatives, Kemi Badenoch, who is good but probably not experienced enough, they're not going to want to lead the party into an inevitable defeat now. No one can beat the odds anymore, I don't think. In terms of the Labour Party and where the figures are taking us, I'm just looking at them now. Labour's going to win about... It's probably going to be up about 15%. Conservatives are probably going to lose half of their councillors. Lib Dems are going to be up a little bit, maybe about the same as Labour. It's not no great shakes there, but the reality is there's nothing the Conservatives can do between now and October that's going to change people's views. I suppose they could encourage Argentina to invade the Falkland Islands and then win them back. That's what Thatcher did to win an election. So they could try that, but short of something as dramatic as that, the writing's on the wall now. When I go into Parliament, which I don't really like doing, but when I go in, any Conservative with a majority of less than 12,000 thinks of themselves as a marginal. And they'll think that even more after the by-election result last night, where 16,000 majority was overturned. It was 16,000 majority. That's right. And so how I see this now is we've got the Uni Party, Labour, Conservative, Lib Dem, on one side, and all the other parties in the other, including your party, I have to say. When I went into the ballot box yesterday, I looked at those Labour. What they stand for? Climate emergency and opposed to ceasefire in Gaza. But the Tories support a climate emergency and are opposed to ceasefire in Gaza. And the Lib Dems, the same. And that's probably why the Greens have done all right. So I think it's a very dark time in terms of choice for the country. And that's one reason parties like yours and the other smaller parties might be doing quite well.
Yeah, well, I certainly hope so. By the time the election comes around, you know, we've got another 4 or 5 or 6 months to prepare for it, and things might change. And, you know, it's a question of how quickly this collapses. I already see that around the country, there's massive disillusionment with both Labour and Tory and, you know, to some extent, Lib Dems and Greens, but also to some extent, people are voting for them because they see them as an alternative to the big two, not realising that the next two are just the same as the first two. And you need to go beyond that to parties like mine to actually have a real alternative that is going to stand up against the climate emergency and escalating war all over the world, which we really don't want. But another one that's coming up as well, I mean, tomorrow evening, the London mayor election results are going to be announced. And that, I guess, is the headline result that's going to be the most important one of the weekend. I mean, you could say the Blackpool result is important, but tomorrow, all eyes are going to be focused on London. Do you think Sadiq Khan is going to win, or might he be booted out?
If you'd asked me that an hour ago, I'd have said yes, he was going to win. I've been speaking to insiders who have seen some early counting of the vote, verification of the votes. It's not actually working out who's voting for whom. But if you watch carefully, you can get an idea of what's going on. And Sadiq Khan is losing hand over fist, absolutely being trashed by Susan Hall, who I never regarded as a strong candidate for the Conservatives. But on the outlying areas, she's coming in 2-1 or 3-1. Now, amazing. The question, therefore, is, can the inner city vote outweigh the outer vote? My source says that Susan Hall, the Conservative vote, is turning out in high numbers, something like 55%, which is really high for this election. But the Labour vote's at 20% because people hate him. They hate him. And they use unrepeatable language about him quite consistently. So I'm going to make a prediction, which could be wrong. If my source is correct, the next mayor of London is going to be Susan Hall. And if she doesn't win, it's possible that she'll lose just because the Reform UK candidate, Howard Cox, has snaffled away too many votes off her, in which case people will blame Reform UK for giving us 4 more years of Khan, a man who, in my opinion, at least is wrecking the city. So that's what I've been told. I haven't seen that directly. That's what I've been told. Incidentally, on Sunday, I'm going to have Keith Prince, who's a friend of today's News Talk TNT, who I think is going to hold his Conservative seat on the Greater London Assembly. He's going to come on. Even if he doesn't win, he's going to come on, and he'll give his candid opinion about that. And we've got Russell, Professor Russell Deakin, tomorrow on Saturday at 10 a.m. UK time. That's 9 a.m. GMT. He's a professor of politics, and he'll be able to give an objective analysis of what's going on. But putting all that together, I think Khan is not assured of victory. He would still be the favorite if he looked at the odds. But now I'm hearing this different story. And the other point here, David, is if he does win, London is almost ungovernable by him because people hate him so much.
That is incredible. Well, you heard it here first.
Wrong.
You're not supposed to. You never know. I mean, you're not supposed to talk. You know, give any indication of the results from inside. You're not supposed to tell people on the outside. But in these days of smartphones and Wi-Fi and internet connections, you know, it's impossible to stop. You know, well, sort of information like this and leaking out. But
in which case, that puts me in the same position as Assange. I'll see you in Belmarsh.
not you, but the people inside are not supposed to tell anyone.
No, because I've committed the same crime as Assange. Didn't do the digging. He simply reported it. I didn't do the digging. I simply reported it. I just hope food's good.
You did, but I'm sure, you know, we're going to see similar things, you know, throughout the day today and tomorrow from other media outlets as well, because everyone is going to be looking and analyzing this and you know, writing about what might happen. Well, that's very exciting. So there might be a turn up for the books in London. We shall see what happens. I mean, I'm no fan of either Labour or the Conservatives, but in this case, I mean, Sadiq Khan is absolutely dreadful, and I will be happy if he's booted out. So we shall see. Anyway, Lembit, thank you so much for joining me and talking about the local elections which are going on today. This is today's News Talk, TNT.
When I had my heart event close to 4 years ago, I was at the gym, thought I deserve a coffee, and thought I'll top up with fuel, ordered a coffee. But while I was pumping fuel, I started to get chest pains. Then it got worse and worse and worse. So then I was leaning on the counter thinking, yeah, something's not quite right. So then I went to wait for the coffee, and that's when it really, really hit. And Joy just, you know, mouthed, "Do you need an ambulance?" And I remember nodding. I wasn't even thinking about a heart attack. I just thought, something is seriously wrong with me here. So when the cardiologist came to see me, she informed me that I'd had what they call a widowmaker heart attack. Bit of a shock when someone says, you know, you nearly died. Everybody should be aware of all the symptoms of a heart attack that women can have that aren't typical of the shoulder pain, the right arm pain. I go to the gym, I do yoga, Pilates, I swim, I go on bike rides, and yet I still had a heart attack. You just don't know, it could be you.
Prescription drug pricing points to corporate
Freedom of the press is about your right to know. It's about your right to be informed. Today, there are real threats to press freedom and your right to know about the world around us. We must protect our right to know, no matter what kind of news is important to you. Before it's too late, understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Discussing national and international issues, this is the David Curtin Show on today's News Talk, TNT.
People are increasingly disillusioned with politics, political parties, and particularly the major two political parties which make up most of the seats in Parliament, the fake Conservatives and Labour. Obviously, we've got local election results coming in, but I am delighted to have on the show with me Paul Thorpe, who interviewed me recently on his show, and now he's come to join me. Paul is a patriotic political commentator and also an expert in business as well. Paul, welcome to the show.
Good morning, David. Lovely to see you again. Thanks for having me on.
It's really great to have you on as well. But obviously, we're spending a lot of time talking about local election results, which goes along with all the kind of things that you mentioned, because you look at what is happening in this country, and it just seems to be an absolute mess, doesn't it? I mean, from talking to people around on your show and interviewing people, what do you think are the main things that people are concerned about and disillusioned about?
Well, I think unquestionably, number one is mass illegal immigration, migration. I mean, we had 700 arrive on our shores just yesterday, I believe, all unchecked, unknown histories, you know, 700 potential, and I'm not saying they will be, but potential terrorist threats, potential dangers to our women, our children, our society. It just cannot go on. And then you've got the cost of living, the NHS, the list just goes on and on and on.
Who do you blame for this, though? Is it the fault of politicians, or is it the fault of the civil service, or somebody else, or globalist bodies? I mean, who do we get rid of to sort the problem out?
Well, I think we just need a complete and utter clear out from top to bottom in every sector that you can look at. I mean, what is running well in this day and age? What is serving the public well? Who is doing a good job? And I'm afraid the list gets shorter and shorter and shorter by the day, almost. You know, it's just incredible. I mean, everything we look at in this day and age is a complete and utter mess. You've only got to get into any black cab in London, and black cab drivers will tell you what's going on. And every single one of them that I speak to, everyone is telling them that they are sick to death of just about everything going on. And if we look at the results that look like coming through overnight, the Tories have obviously taken an absolute and much deserved kicking. But I think that's the public firing, you know, a warning shot across the bow of what's to come, unless there's a big change.
But, you know, that's all very well, given the Tories a big kicking. But if they get back in the next election, you know, if there is a swing back to them, which sometimes happens in the week before an election, because people go, oh, right, OK, now it's real. Now I got to vote for, you know, the least worst option, which is what people do in this country. Is it going to change with them? I mean, can you see any person in the Tory party being decent in terms of leadership in any capacity?
Well, it's a real tough one because, look, they all talk a good game, don't they? Yeah? The bottom line is that they're very convincing for a lot of people. And let's face it, you know, the British people in general, David, I think we're a bit of an I'm all right, Jack nation. We don't really, we're not particularly a political animal, I think, in the UK in general. People will tend to believe what they see. They take politicians at face value, which is a huge mistake, in my opinion. You know, look, Suella Braverman, maybe she could have done a job. They kicked her out, you know. Lee Anderson, maybe he could have done something, but he was, you know, persona non grata in the end. Who knows? But for me, you know, Rishi, I've always believed there's a plan down the line somewhere. My own personal belief is that the long term plan will be Nigel Farage, but that's just my view.
Right. I mean, who knows? We'll see. I mean, he's sort of sitting on the sidelines at the moment. He's the president of Reform. He's also the major shareholder of Reform UK Limited. So he's obviously very, very much involved behind the scenes. So, did you think he might step back into politics just before a general election?
Well, look, I think that's the only way. For me personally, unless they put someone like Farage in charge, I think Suella Braverman could win a lot of populist votes. I think, you know, she says she talks a good game. I don't think they've got a cat's chance in hell of winning the next elections. And they must know that. Surely by now they must know that. They have to put the fundamentals right. For me, right now, there's three fundamentals they have to get right: the cost of living, the NHS, immigration. Without putting at least two of those three things right, without checking at least two of those three boxes, they're done.
What do you think of the Rwanda scheme?
Well, I think the whole thing's been an expensive farce. It's an absolute joke. I mean, you couldn't make it up, could you? I mean, I've spent 40-plus years in business, David, and if I came up with a plan like that, I'd have been skint and eating crisps for the rest of my life. I mean, it's just an absolute ridiculous and utter farce. The amount of money that we've sent to Rwanda already, the amount of money that each removed migrant is going to cost us, is just absolutely ridiculous. And it's an insult to the intelligence of the British nation.
Yeah, I do totally agree with you. I think they've sent something like 120 million to Rwanda, and we've sent one person there. And we've given him £3,000 as well for spending money.
I mean, look, it's a carry-on film from the 1970s, isn't it?
It is, except it's not funny, is it? I mean, I laugh because it's the only thing I can do because it is so ridiculous.
What else can we do?
But when you actually think about what actually it is doing and, the effects of people on communities around the country, because this is where it is really important. I mean, it doesn't affect the people who are sitting in the Houses of Parliament saying, oh, you know, migrants welcome, or we're going to send them to Rwanda and not send a single person. In the meantime, 700, 500, 600 people are coming across the channel every day, and they're getting filtered to hotels around the country, and they're getting put in, now they're getting put in houses in private rented sector around the country, big contracts going to Serco and others to sort this out. And so you've got the people making a lot of money there, and it's affecting communities around the country. And this is where it is. I mean, it must be awful. You know, it doesn't affect me so much personally, but I speak to people who live in East London, and that, you know, it's people who've lived in East London, for example, for 40, 50 years have seen their neighborhoods completely transformed.
David, let's be clear about this. These people are being ethnically cleansed from their own communities. And that's the bottom line. They are being ethnically cleansed from their own communities, and it's utterly outrageous. And the other thing that we need to deal with in this country, in my belief, is that we need to start dealing with the enemy within as well. And we saw those people yesterday in Peckham trying to stop the removal of people down to Bibby, Stockholm. Weymouth, by the way, a place where my parents took me on holiday when I was a kid. That was a treat for me to go to Weymouth from London. Yeah. You know, and we've got the enemy within trying to stop the removal of these people, or the transfer, not the removal. They're only going down from London to the seaside. You've got the civil servants now, the civil service trying to block the room. You know, the whole thing is just absolutely insane and unbelievable.
You look at those people, and it looks like a mixture of those, some people who look like the old Black Panthers from America, and also some, you know, well-to-do upper middle class graduates who have been indoctrinated with cultural Marxism. This is a very bizarre alliance of sort of like graduates and then the hardcore, the black supremacists are all standing together to stop the police from moving migrants to a barge where they should be, you know, not that the people in Portland want that barge there, but they're being moved to where the government wants them to go. And ultimately, those people want them to stay in the country. That's their purpose. I mean, don't you think that's a very bizarre alliance you've got there?
Oh, it's hugely strange. I mean, when you look at the political mix that's coming together on the far left right now, it is really quite strange and bizarre. And you have to ask those people, what is their ultimate end game? What is their end game? Mm. What do they want out of society? Most of them haven't done a day's work in their life. It's my guess. The rest will be, you know, middle class, well-to-do, don't have to do a day's work in their life because mum and dad are taking care of them. So what is their end game? And the other thing that I would always like to ask them is, if you're so keen on this, well, how about you opt in and we'll opt out? You pay for them, you take them in, you house them, you clothe them, you feed them, and we'll take care of our own. How about that?
Sounds fair, doesn't it? But they'll never have to do that because they all live in nice gated communities where they don't have to share their space and money and time and resources with the people that they say everybody else has to share their space and time and resources with. This is the hypocrisy of it.
You know, that coach, it wasn't going to Alcatraz Island, by the way. It was going down to Weymouth by the sea on a barge, almost on a cruise ship, if you like. I mean, people pay money for that privilege. I'm not saying that the Bibby Stockholm is a five-star hotel. But let's face it, this is all for free. It's costing us an absolute fortune at a time when our own people, our own working class people who are suffering up and down the country, struggling to pay their bills, struggling to insure their cars, struggling to feed their families. We need money back in our system, taking care of our people. That's just where I'm at.
The thing with that, though, I mean, just to play devil's advocate for a minute, is how are we going to get more money to the people that need it there? I mean, you talk about increasing public services. I'm all for that, you know, providing good schools, good hospitals, good doctors, good GPs, good dentistry, which, you know, that's a big, big issue that people have. Hardly anyone can get a local dentist. Yeah. But we're in masses of national debt at the moment. And we're borrowing over £100 billion a year. I mean, how can we afford that? Where are we going to get the money from to pay for more public services?
Well, you have to be innovative, don't you, David? You have to have a whirlwind. You have to have, you know, some ideas. I mean, as an example, I mean, look, I'm one of those middle-class people. I'm working class by birth, but I've worked my way up to be middle class. You know, I'd be happy to pay for a doctor's appointment, for an example. So one of what you could introduce, just one quick idea, you could introduce a £10 voluntary payment for a doctor's appointment. And I'm sure that many people like myself will be happy, more than happy, to pay £10 for a doctor's appointment if I could bloody get one, right? But you know, I'd be more than happy to donate money. I would like to see the national lottery nationalised and make it the NHS lottery or the emergency services lottery. There are many innovative ways that you can ask the public to participate in a national fundraising scheme for causes that we deem as being worthwhile. We can certainly slow down almost to the point of zero the amount of foreign aid that we're sending overseas, billions of pounds every year. Where does it go? Who is it helping? Look, I'm all for helping people that genuinely need help. But let's start at home. Billions of pounds being sent over. We even send money to China. For God's sake, it has to stop. It's insanity. And it doesn't take a rocket scientist or, you know, businessman of the year to work some of this stuff out. I'm just an ordinary businessman that made a success of my life, and I did it through making sensible, calm, correct decisions.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. We got foreign aid. We've got war in Ukraine. We've got war in Gaza. We've got diversity officers. We got quangos. We've got subsidies for solar panels and wind turbines, which don't produce hardly any energy. And that's going to leave us with blackouts. Yeah. So
David,
many
it's
things.
It's never ending, right? It's never ending.
Yeah, right. Absolute waste. But somebody's making money from this. And, you know, what really annoys me is that, you know, the people who are, you know, maybe friends or mates of MPs, you know, or donors to the Tory party, you give some money and then, you know, you get a contract which is worth 100 or 1,000 times as much as what you gave to a political party. Nothing happens to these people. They just get away with it. This country is utterly corrupt, but it's hidden. It's not ostentatious, you know, like African presidents like Mugabe, whatever, his wife goes, you know, shopping in Switzerland and takes photos and builds himself a palace. You can see it. In here, it's all hidden, but it's done through contracts and purchasing and all this kind of stuff. Absolutely. And it's like, I think these people need to be put in jail. You know, we need to take the stuff that they pilfered, you know, by being... But, you know, through nepotism and corruption and stick them in jail. I mean, otherwise it's just going to go on and on and on.
It's good old-fashioned jobs for the boys in many cases, you know. But talking about being in jail, you know, I was talking yesterday on my channel about the people that have aided and abetted those staying here illegally that have gone on to commit crimes. David, these people have blood on their hands, left, right and centre. You think of the amount of victims... and you look at what's going on in Paris now. I heard yesterday that 77% of rape victims in Paris now are crimes are committed by non-French nationals. 77%. It's insane.
Ooh. Dreadful. This is migrant crime. It is a huge issue, and it's affecting France. It's affecting here in this country. We see, you know, things, you know, I guess the example that most people know about more than any is Fusilier Lee Rigby, you know, who was killed by a migrant there just over 10 years ago. Look, we could talk about this for so long, Paul, but we're nearly out of time and nearly at the end of the show. But thank you so much for coming on. I hear it's your birthday. birthday today. So.
It is my birthday, David. Thank you very much. Yeah. I mean, can I just say the best mayor that we never had, I'm afraid. David, we'd love to have had you as mayor of London.
Thank you. Well, next time, I hope some of our candidates from the Heritage Party get in on the London Assembly, at least, where we're standing this time. But Paul, happy birthday. Thank you so much for joining me today on the show. Great. Stay with us if you're watching. Rick Munn is here with Locked and Loaded coming up. He's going to have on his show Luke Andreski, Basil Valentine, Charlie Sansom, and Jonathan Weissman. I'll be back with you on Monday. Thank you for joining me here on today's News Talk, TNT.